It's your girl Tabitha sharing tales from veterinary technicians. And today we're speaking to badass vet tech, VTS in emergency and critical care, April Bays, all about why are vet and shelter professionals leaving the field? I know everyone in the media is acting like this is a new thing with the pandemic, but as we all know who are working in the field, it is not new. Just we've reached our threshold. So tune into this awesome chat between me and April. I am so excited to have April Bays, badass vet tech, with me today to discuss a common concern amongst everyone right now. Why vet and shelter professionals are leaving the field, what factors are contributing, how can we help these amazing colleagues of ours? And it's really interesting because April actually recently left emergency and critical care in 2020 to start her own business, Elevative Veterinary Training Solutions, in order to focus full-time on technician development and training and to provide practical hands-on guidance to practices which are implementing her program. I love this so much. So, thank you so much for being with us, April. And can you tell me a little bit about your career path and how you got to this starting this amazing business?
Absolutely. I'd love to. Well, thank you, Tabitha, for having me. Well, really, the quick version is I always wanted to be a vet. I thought, in the meantime, maybe I can get some volunteer hours, under my belt. I started volunteering at a clinic. Eventually, they were like, dude, we should pay you. I was like, are you serious? I could get paid for this.
How old were you?
I was 19.
Oh, geez, you were about, bless your soul.
I know. Well, so that contributed to just
Yeah.
jump in both feet. I remember coming home and telling my boyfriend, my husband now, I was like, I have scrubs and I wear scrubs to work. So I have really made it. And it was so exciting just to dip my toe in this thing that I, knew was my destiny. So this was just like coming home. And then, just worked at some clinics and in the meantime, never really thought about getting credentialed because, again, I was going to vet school. So, what difference did it make? At the time, which was 2007, we could still grandfather in, as it was called, where we could take the test and basically challenge the boards. Again, I didn't see the point. My friends were like, it really is a good idea. Just getting certified does, a lot for the profession and you as an individual, even if you don't go here, you've already kind of done the work. So
Right.
take the test and see how you do. And I was like, you guys, I don't know anything. I've just been taught how to, which isn't true at all. So I took the test and I passed and I was like, this is amazing. This is a whole career of
I
its
love your
own.
friends pushing you to do that step.
This is a very good point because I can recognize now that every one of those steps that I took, even volunteering at a clinic, because I was like, what good am I at a clinic? I don't know anything. It was a friend who was like, you really should just go and see if they could use your help. And of course they could. So they were like, absolutely. And I never even considered it. Well, so many years later, the emergency clinic in town was just calling. We worked with some regular day practices as I forget the word, but anyhow, so within those practices, they were reaching out like, do you have any technicians or assistants that want to come
Right.
over and do, some relief work? I was definitely unprepared, but I was, a mom. And so I'm like, how can I work out the working on weekends or nights so I can avoid daycare costs and all of this stuff? So, work at night so that I don't sleep, but I managed to get, you know what I mean?
Oh,
So then
gee,
I'm awake
yeah,
for
you're
16
like,
during the
I
day.
don't need sleep,
Right,
but this way
right,
my child, I could take care of my child and work. Sleep is
right.
later, right?
So never really considered how I was, just working it out. So, even though I felt totally unprepared, I really liked it and I found that I was still useful there. Of course I was. And so it really just sort of seeped into me. And then I stayed in emergency and critical care for about 15 more years. And again, another friend was like, hey, there's this VTS thing, a veterinary technician specialist in emergency and critical care, and you should consider it. And I was like, again, that's so awesome. I'm so incredibly impressed. I want to help you with it. I want to watch you do it. And I want to pat you on the back. But girl, I didn't even go to school. Like, I'm not prepared to do this. This is not, I don't know anything about this stuff. I just really enjoy it. It's just, yeah, I have a lot of excuses, you know? So yeah, I was like, okay, fine, I'll do it. And I jumped in and it absolutely changed my life. I had no idea. I had no idea technicians could be
as amazing as we are.
So amazing. Yeah. That's the thing. It's, I had no idea. Now, you know, my own path is definitely not that school, and it's embracing this, which is so incredibly fulfilling. So really, I just noticed that I just needed somebody to be like, of course you can do these things and you should be doing these things. And actually, that's the job you should have been doing this whole time. You just didn't know. And I see, looking around me, we all are just kind of going through the motions and doing the stuff. And we don't know that we should have been pushing for all of this stuff. And so I just started noticing that all of my education came from me. And it wasn't, you know, it was always important.
You weren't necessarily empowered in the way that would be awesome to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was get CE done so I can maintain my license, of course. But it wasn't the focus until I made it the focus. When I made it the focus, it changed my life as a technician completely. I was like, I am a far better technician than I was before I understood this level of, you know, whatever it may be. And so I started, you know, kind of just bringing that to my coworkers and kind of teaching just within that group and training them. And it just became so evident to me that the training and the lack of time to train and the education that we, just the variability of it, you know, one person to the next has any number of, you know, commonalities, but also things that each of them don't even know each other know. It's so vast that this is part of the problem, and it just kind of keeps us stumped. And so I'm just trying to focus this area there. And, you know, the pandemic has really highlighted some things like this problem.
Right. It's interesting because I think as veterinary professionals who both left practice,
mm-hmm.
And I'm very similar in that boat where I empowered the heck out of myself, mm-hmm. and learned everything, a lot of it. Now I have amazing mentors and colleagues, but it wasn't always like that. And I had to, like you said, I kind of had to seek it out myself, and I found mm-hmm. my niche, right? Because mm-hmm. yours was emergency, mine's behavior, but the importance of staying well-educated. And also it keeps us energized, man. Like, it keeps us stoked about, because I 100%. Can tell just hearing you speak that you truly love what you do. And I think as teachers, which we've all been taught by someone who either wasn't taught appropriately because they were just taught by the staff member who hasn't had CE for 15 years, right?
Yep. Yeah. We've always done it this way.
Teaching us kind of the wrong, but outdated stuff. Sure. Or they were burnt out or mm-hmm. not into teaching and mm-hmm. not feeling it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. do I really want to do this job?
Yeah.
I'm not feeling this good energy here. So I think that that's so wonderful that you realized that there was a huge lack there and you're like, well, I like this. I'm good at this. So why not start my own business? So mm-hmm. I know for me personally, this is a whole nother podcast, but it was really hard for me to leave general practice.
Oh yeah.
I felt like I wasn't, you guys, I realize this is silly now, but I'm being honest. I didn't feel like a technician.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very, very, cause I think we identify, which is a whole nother thing,
but
we identify as vet techs, which I am a vet tech. You are a vet tech, but
mm-hmm.
I'm a vet tech right now. And I was a vet tech back then. So did you have any of those similar struggles when you took the humongous, impressive leap to leave emergency and start your own business?
Oh my gosh. Yes. In fact, so it's February now. I left in May. I'm still like, I feel like I'm paddling, just like flapping around. I don't know why. I think the only reason is because I'm not doing the thing I've always known myself to be or identified as, is, you know, like on the floor, doing the stuff. And if I'm not doing that, then who am I? But that's the foundational problem, is that I wasn't primarily a vet tech. I was always myself, who was a badass vet tech, was really good at her job, but also mostly a whole person.
You and know, it's that, so funny because
that it should complement it.
Like you mentioning that makes me kind of think, because I'm all about like clear criteria and defining things. Mm-hmm. And I think as a whole, even other veterinary professionals, we define vet tech as a very specific thing.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, both of us talk about how vet techs are amazing and we can be writers, educators. We can work, like I work with vaccine clinics, but I also work in GP, but as a consultant, like, but we were so conditioned to be like, this is the definition of vet tech. Mm-hmm. You go to a practice, which is still super important, but mm-hmm. not really thinking the big picture. And both of us really struggled with changing the definition in our heads of a vet tech, which, whoa, that blows my mind. I just realized that.
I know though. It's true. And I think it's why we kind of got into the position that we're in, because we thought we were doing a good job to the clinic, to the patients, to ourselves. And really only in recognizing the outcome of that, it's been, to be honest, probably 5 years that I've needed to change something and I couldn't, because what else could I do? Now I've sort of, you know, felt like I've narrowed into this specific thing. How do I do emergency and critical care outside of the clinic, or, you know, like getting my body off of the floor, you know, physically it's not, you know, it's hard.
And we change, whether it's our physical needs or what we're capable of doing physically, but also mentally, like we may not be fulfilled the same way we were 5 years ago, but that means we're doing something correctly, because we're always improving,
adapting
growing. And changing. And I always joke, like if I'm doing a workshop or if I'm speaking and the projector breaks or something, I'm like, I'm a vet tech. I fucking got this. I can like throw me into a situation. And me and April were joking before I started recording about how some of our experiences in vet med weren't very positive and somewhat traumatic. And how we're thankful for those experiences, because it made us the people we are today. And we can do, we're working hard to do what we can to prevent other animal professionals from experiencing the stuff we did. So April obviously started this amazing business, and she's a huge advocate for animal professionals. And on that note, like you said, the pandemic is really making people aware of the like animal professional, especially vet tech shortage. But for us vet techs, y'all, this has always been a fucking thing. I don't really know. I don't really know what the 100%. Surprise is. Awareness is important. Like, seriously, I'm going to reinforce that. That's great.
Right.
But you guys, this didn't happen with COVID. You know, this has been an issue. And on that note, what biggest contributing reasons would you say why vet and shelter professionals are leaving the field in your perspective?
Yeah. So I think it's lack of emphasis on personal growth, and that we come into a practice being like, this is what I have to offer. And at least for myself, again, I hope that this is changing and that people are not coming into vet med with this idea. But I was kind of like, again, I'm psyched that they're paying me at all. So of course I was like, okay, so $850 seems right. And as a VTS, I made $18.50 or something like that. And
not okay. Tabitha not okay. Saying that. Sorry, not okay.
And please stop. Say it. And that I was like, yeah, that's great for me, because as a vet tech, I'm not supposed to make any money.
We've been conditioned. It's so weird to like self-deprecate ourselves.
Yeah. Yes. So then, so I feel like this certainly highlights the problem, and it makes the intolerable parts intolerable. And I think that for me, that was the case, but it doesn't change what it is. And so for me, and again, this is definitely a thing, but the busyness, the overwork, the underpay, that has always been there. Why is it a problem now? It's probably just that we've always been so burnt out that this is just tipping the scale. But in my experience, our morale is bad when we're not emphasizing our own priorities, really. So we're just, you know, it's just like we're focused on the team. And that feels so good and fulfilling because, of course. So we continue with that instead of ever going, okay, now not in crisis mode, how do we take care of ourselves so we can do a better job? It reminds me of what happened several years ago when we were in the the market was terrible in 2007-ish.
The house mortgage stuff and all that lovely stuff. Yes.
Yes. So during the housing crisis, things got really bad. It was so long ago. I realized some people don't remember it.
Yeah.
They weren't in that bed then, or they weren't out of high school. So if that's you, awesome. Amen to you. That's but there was this terrible period in the late aughts that half of the people that came in didn't have a job and they couldn't pay for anything. And it was so demoralizing. In emergency, we euthanized everything. If you can't repair this thing, you're torturing this poor soul. None of us want that. And the solution is
the most humane thing to do realistically is to euthanize. Yes.
So while we recognize that that's the case, at this time, you know, staff became hard to find, qualified staff, all of that stuff. Turnover rate has always been a problem. But the evidence shows us that it's not that we don't have enough vet techs coming out of school, that it's that turnover, that constant starting over again and again and again, that's really the problem. That the turnover is just the sort of machine that's driving this constant, you know, not getting anybody settled into a place where, and again, that could just be a symptom of not being utilized. But so, you know, my bosses at the time, I was the head tech, they were like, we need to get all these people trained. Because at the time, for example, we had like two technicians that could run anesthesia. So what did that mean? That meant I was coming in all of the time.
Yeah.
So my doctors are like, I need you to solve this problem with trying to get these people trained. And I was like, I'm 100% with you. How do we do this? So I started to develop this training manual. And that's basically where all of that started, was in my clinic, I needed to train these people. But what I recognized was the need was, give me people that can do this stuff right now. And I was like, I am the only one that can do this right now. So what you're really asking is for me to do it and figure out how to just get those other people trained on apparently my off time or my second or third job. I mean, the thing is, that was what I had to say to them. I am so sorry, but I have to slow down and show Tabitha how to use the ventilator so that next time it's midnight and it's my seventh day in a row, I don't have to come in to do this surgery. That is not thinking.
And that's helpful too, because that way you're also setting up that staff member to be more confident and educated on the ventilator. Because as technicians, or even working at a shelter, we've all been thrown into situations like monitoring anesthesia. And whoa, can that create a negative association if something goes wrong and you don't know what to do? And we shouldn't be just throwing people to monitor anesthesia who don't know what they're doing, but also we need to set them up for success so they are confident in what they are doing, which unfortunately, I don't think happens enough.
Yeah, 100%. That is, that's definitely what I found, is that this is how we end up with, you know, just stuff out there that sometimes is outdated. And it's just, quote, the way we've always done it, end quote, which is something that makes me want to, you know,
triggers all of us guys.
Right. So the reason that's a problem is because if you don't know why you're doing it, then you are just perpetuating a problem. And so the reason that that mattered to me was because I recognized that I was doing that. And I was like, I don't know why. And then I'm like, why haven't I ever asked why we do this? And that was the whole mind shift behind just, I'm not just checking the boxes saying I did the thing, like I gave that pet pain meds or whatever. Now I know what those drugs are, how they work, and the dose that we gave. And now I know that that was inadequate. So no wonder he's acting painful. So now I can bring that information to the doctor and say, so-and-so is painful in my opinion for these reasons. I have evidence because I know a lot about it. And really, it's irrefutable. So
yeah, I could definitely. And that's another thing. It's a good use to basically skills to advocate for patients, because I've definitely a huge advocate and start conversations and ask questions that may be difficult. I'm always kind of professional, but I'm not going to lie. I wasn't always that technician. And then ethically, I was conflicted and I would, and for me, my ethical standpoint is very important. Everyone's different. Everyone's ethics are different, but I would go home and cry and feel conflicted. And again, it would just contribute to my compassion fatigue and burnout. So it's just this vicious cycle where we can't, because we could say this pet feels, it's kind of like when I say it's important to describe behavior and not use labels. That dog's mean. Okay. That's not helpful information.
That's not how he's acting.
Exactly. Let's observe the behavior. And then I can advocate to a veterinarian, a client, another veterinary professional to understand, like you said, I understand you gave that pain med, that dose.
Right.
Pain meds work different for every individual patient. This is what I'm observing, veterinarian. This is, so it's, it makes us better. And I think we've all got, I definitely agree, got kind of caught up in this is how we do it. We just check the boxes and we're technicians and we don't really, we aren't empowered, or a lot of environments that we're put into, we're not actually taught how to critically think, which is insane. And apply.
So much of our job. And it hasn't been emphasized.
And that's why I love behavior, because it's a fun puzzle. I think handling is complex, and I critically think to work with each patient out, and it makes me, like you said, it's fun. It keeps things fun and entertaining for us, but also we're correctly advocating for our patients. But if you're just going through the motions, which I've definitely been in that state.
Oh, for sure. And sometimes that's encouraged. Sometimes that's the way they want it. Just do what I say to do. And you don't think
ask
about
questions
at all. Right. Yeah. So thinking about it requires you to know things and to ask questions. And if that's not being encouraged, then that's the problem. But unfortunately, sometimes all the other stuff, the busyness and the harriedness and the stressfulness of the job just leads to, let's just get this done. The crisis that I feel like we're always in. It's always something. It's always not enough or too much demand. And that will always be there because I don't see an alternative yet. So what can we do then to combat that? Well, we have to empower our technicians, and we have to let them know that they are an integral part of this team. And I mean, without a doubt, I've worked with these incredible doctors, but the more I knew, the more they could lean on me. And they were so comfortable with that because they knew what I knew. So when we talked about things, I wasn't going, I think this, and you're doing this wrong, and you should do this. I say, here's my piece. Here's what I think. What do you think about this? And then we can discuss it together because we know where each other are coming from, and we can discuss the details of it instead of just being like, I think this, well, I disagree. Okay, well, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
That's not a conversation.
And as a I worked in inpatient, right? Which you did, I'm sure, in emergency and critical care. I worked in inpatient and GP, and I was the one monitoring the patient throughout the day, giving medications, giving updates. The vet would be in exam rooms.
Yep.
And I would update them. So I was pretty well utilized at most of the practices I worked at, but that problem you mentioned earlier kept happening where I was working with inpatients, which is a lot. I was doing callbacks and all these other things. And then also if there was a client who couldn't give medication, or a fearful dog who's exhibiting aggressive behaviors, Tabitha.
Yep.
And that's actually what got, because ideally we want the whole staff to be able to know how to do something, but I've come to terms that that is not the motivation in most practices. So finally I was like, hey, dude, sir, I can't, like you said, I reached a threshold, which ideally I wish I would have advocated for myself prior to that, because I think we're all just over threshold now. But I was like, I can't handle every fearful patient that comes in here. You need, and I gave him a solution. So I wasn't just venting, right? And I said, please let me teach the staff how to handle fearful pets. And then also those staff members, I always say this, but I feel like we don't really set up techs to succeed because we don't teach them a lot about body language, for example, at least my experience, or different handling techniques. So if you only learn that one handling technique for cats and that you keep doing it.
You're going to think it's the only way.
Yeah. And the cat gets upset and more fearful, but you don't change up what you're doing. You do the same thing harder.
Yeah.
But that technician is doing the best with what they know. And it just, I understand exactly right. Why I meet so many colleagues who are afraid of cats now. Yeah. Like core thing, because they literally think like cats just jump up and bite you and all these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, because they were taught to do something that causes stress. And then when the animal shows any sign of movement, which animals are alive, guys, they're supposed to move. We were taught to hold them tighter instead of critically think, like you said. So you can't come in every night, even though we've all been that tech. Hey, someone needs anesthesia, which is very common in emergency and critical care. Yeah. April, girl, I know you're not at work, but can you please come in? And I'm like, this is not an on-call position.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we've created this because you expect it to happen. I know it needs to happen. I want to be a good employee. I want to be a good technician. So it seems like 2 + 2 is what I got to do here. Like it just seems like that's the answer. And that's the thing, is that we're not necessarily stopping and questioning it and going, does this seem reasonable? Why is this the expectation? And I think that's the thing. I mean, the problems with longevity in the field have been lack of livable wage, of course, our benefits and all of those things. But like we said, that's always been there.
Yes.
So what makes it harder now? I think it's just that we've always been on the brink, and now we raise the water level by a centimeter and it was too much. But I think it just goes to show where it's been this whole time, and that we haven't made a peep, but we've been dying this whole time.
Legit.
And we haven't done anything but keep pushing ourselves into the ground to get the work done because we're dying to do it. If it matters so much.
And that's a whole problem. I mean, that's a whole caregiver thing in general. Yeah. Like teachers who buy supplies for their students. And just like you said, I've been a part of a team and I don't take the vacation that I barely get because my team members guilt trip me about it.
Yeah.
or you don't want to leave your team with because we're not appropriately staffed. So I'll come in on my day off. And I'm like, that is such a, because realistically, if we're overreaching and overworking, same thing with human medical professionals, like guys, I remember one day I was working, I started at 7. I was a surgical tech. I did surgeries all morning and then I was taking care of inpatients and it was 12 midnight and this was a GP. So ideally not a shift we should be working, but things happened.
Right. Oh,
I dropped a propofol bottle. I remember it to this day, you guys. It was a long time ago. And I got screamed at for it.
Oh my God.
And even at that time, I think everyone, again, I'm not justifying that behavior, but I think everyone was over threshold. We're all tired.
Sure. Yeah.
And I remember even back then knowing like, dude, this is unsustainable. I can't do my job.
I dropped it.
I couldn't, like, if I was working that long and you had me monitor anesthesia, at midnight, guys, I'm great, but it doesn't work like that. Our work lacks. And if we're coming in on our days off, every, like you said, staff morale, it's just this vicious circle. Exactly. I love the water level analogy you use. And I think with the pandemic, obviously everyone's over threshold because guys, we're living in a pandemic, but these things aren't new. And I think ideally, we do need more wages and benefits and CE allowance, the basic stuff that I think more of us need to be talking about and advocating for ourselves. But I also think there are things that we can do to each other to set each other up for success. Like you mentioned, empowering your staff, educating your staff, all that lovely stuff.
Yes. So yeah, the other problems with longevity. So that was lack of livable wage. The continuing education. We know that, you know, if when I was an assistant and didn't have to get CE hours, it wasn't really encouraged. It wasn't promoted. I hope that that's changing, but if it wasn't for the credits that I needed for my license, I don't know that it would have been prioritized. But outside of the license in itself, the education has to be a focus, because it's how you maintain good medicine. Like we all bring something to this team and everybody needs to know a lot about it for the team to be great at it, but we all bring different things. And so when I became interested in pain management, because then I was just seeing so much craziness going on outside of, you know, my clinic was doing a great job with pain I felt, and then I would see it from everywhere else. Like, there is, what is happening? How is that adequate?
Definitely.
And how is that tolerable? And I'm thinking, they just don't know.
Yeah.
How do they not know? I don't know. That's not really the problem, but they just don't know. That is not their fault, because chances are they don't know what they don't know. And that's the problem, that it just continues to go on, because again, until I pushed myself, I was just going to continue to do those things. So then the other things are respect and opportunities for upward growth. And that respect comes from people not knowing who we are, what we do. Obviously, we need recognition in that way. I don't know what the answer to that is either. That's also,
and our colleagues I mean, that's a whole, but
yes,
it's not even our colleagues, obviously we've all worked with amazing people, and we're not generalizing everyone, but let's be honest, like, there's a big issue with even our veterinarians, for example, not hiring credentialed technicians and not taking or using the word tech for people who aren't, have zero experience, zero education, and basically devaluing everything that we've, and that, those are our colleagues. So guys, of course the general public's not going to know what we're doing, because we don't even have, I love that point. Like, in some cases we don't have the respect of our veterinarians.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally. Well, that's the other thing, is that then they're not going to ask you if, you know, to do a certain task, or they're not going to, you know, if they don't know what you know. And so more often than not, we don't know what each other's skills are. We're not necessarily pushed to learn the next thing. In fact, in this study, there was several years ago, I don't know what year now, but what's really interesting, if I can read that to you, it's that when it comes to technician utilization, 37% of survey respondents said that they were sometimes or frequently asked to perform a medical task that they were not qualified or trained to do. 59% said that they were sometimes or frequently asked to perform tasks that were lower than what they could do. And 57% said that they are, there were medical tasks that they were, that they are qualified or trained to do, but not frequently being asked to do, or not, you know, usually being the one that gets to do that. That's huge. That was, you know, that's half of all these people not using the skills that they know, or being expected to know skills that they don't know. And that is a fundamental problem. That is a, that is the problem, again, being highlighted. It's not giving us the answer that we can just turn on and say, okay,
the doctors
just need to know. Exactly. The doctors just need to know what the techs know, and the assistants need to know what the techs know. The techs need to know what the assistants know, and everywhere in between. It's not that simple. It's just that it's pointing out that these areas are perpetuating the problem. And so how can you ever see that this person needs to be, that their talents should be highlighted, when we haven't even focused or kind of slowed down or backed up enough to go, oh, okay, so what do we all know? What do we all want each other to know? And where are our, you know, where are the gaps so that we can fill them? Because instead, by nature, we want to be like, oh, that's a gap. I don't want anyone to know. I'm going to, like, you know, keep that, you know, on the down low. Yeah. And then you keep having gaps. I know, I did it. I was a technician that didn't go to school. So I was incredibly insecure about the gaps that I didn't have. And until, it wasn't until many years later that I was like, why am I hiding this? Why can't I just be like, I don't know this very well. And, you know, can somebody else?
Yeah. And me? I think it's like, again, that circle, if we're empowering talking, we are also building environments that are conducive to learning and asking questions, because I know, I understand techs who I speak to who say, I'm afraid to advocate for my patient because I've had pens thrown, or like their learning history has been very not positive, or they're afraid they're going to get fired, which these are very real problems. And I think if we educate, if we educate the whole staff, it's kind of like how you mentioned, you, I love how you were like kind of thrown into the situation. You guys were doing the best with what you could at your emergency. And you're like, okay, where can I start? I'm going to create a manual. I fucking love SOPs, y'all. You got to start somewhere. And that way, at least, and then we're going to start a conversation. We're not going to say you can ask questions. We all know what I mean. Like, we're going to actually create an environment that's conducive to ask why. We're going to talk about a case once a week and be able to offer, like, not criticism, but, hey, I would have done that, this medication, this is why it's an alpha two, whatever. But I hate to say it, but I never got to have those kinds of conversations when I was, again, I hope it's changing, but I personally didn't get to have those kinds of conversations when I was working in GP until towards the end. And at that point I was, like you said, I was a lot more confident in my skill set.
Right.
And I worked on my own to learn all those things. So then I was by being more confident and being more aware of stuff, it was easier for me to advocate for myself. So empowering your staff is going to increase staff morale and just do all of this lovely stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, it took me, you know, 20 years to feel like, okay, now I'm confident enough to be vulnerable.
Right.
But that was kind of the point, is that I wanted them to be able to feel vulnerable now. Like, how can you come out of school and not have a bajillion questions and just the daily, but they must feel like they can't ask all of those things. And that's the thing, is that we have the ego is too involved where, you know, and those are the times that we did ask a question and we were made to feel stupid, or again, something thrown at us. Why is that the thing? Cause that happens so much. Or an instrument. You know, that's the thing, is that those are the conversations that should be happening. It is a back and forth. And we should be able to go, okay, well, I was thinking of a benzodiazepine for this patient. Okay, why? Well, I'm thinking that, you know, his blah, blah, blah is this. Right. And I was wondering if we added it to his opioid, if we'd get a little bit better sedation. And maybe some of that fear would be, you know, removed, and that would help us with our reactivity. Oh, okay, that's interesting. Well, I'm thinking of this dose. What do you think? You know what I mean? It's a back and forth. I wanted to not choose the midazolam for that pet because, you know, it's 6 months old. And so, you know, when they're young and healthy, they just become berserk if they don't have the opioid on board. Okay, what if we combine these? What do you think? Yeah, I like that. Cool, let's do it. That's how that should go. It is a two-way conversation between the technicians and the assistants and the doctors and the owners. That wasn't a two-way conversation, but anyhow.
But no, it's
a back and forth.
Communication is a huge thing.
We have to feel safe to be able to do it.
Exactly. And that needs to be a normal.
Yes.
That to me, I think pay is important and all of these things, of course.
Right.
But my intellectual boundaries and my feeling valued for me personally, money is important. It is, again. But I think the more, if we are empowering each other, allowing questions, all of these things, more technicians are going to say, like, I didn't start writing contracts for the clinics I worked for until the last two clinics that I worked for. I didn't even know that I could do that.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'll just be clear with my criteria to help set us up all up for success. If I'm not a good fit, I don't want to waste 4 weeks of my life and see things that are ethically causing me fear and stress. You know, these things that where you can't, we've all lost sleep. And I think we see this with veterinarians too, where I've worked with veterinarians who've been put into situations where they are really uncomfortable. They're afraid to ask questions or they don't refer something because they need to know it all. Which obviously there's a lot of complex reasons for that.
Right.
But
right.
That's a really concerning problem.
Yes. What was shocking to me was on my VTS journey, I was, working with a doctor I thought I had a really good rapport with. And I asked a question. I think we had a patient with head trauma or something. He said, well, you get so many milligrams of mannitol or whatever. And I asked something like, when would you use hypertonic saline instead in this situation or whatever? And I think we were rushing and he maybe didn't have the right answer or didn't want to have to explain it to me, whatever it was. I'm sure he had his reasons, but he was like, why do you always question me, April? And I was like, oh my gosh, I would never question you. I never even thought that would be seen by you as that. And so that made me realize I need to make sure that they know that when I'm asking, I am asking because I want to learn. And I want to know what your process is, because you made a very deliberate choice, I'm assuming, between mannitol and hypertonic saline in this situation for any number of reasons. And I want to be privy to that. Like, that knowledge I want. And so when it's when you don't have a good rapport or you're not communicating that piece very well, like I could probably have done a better job of, then you can be taken in that way. And then that if that person reacts, like if he didn't say that to me, he could have been like, because I prefer it or because I'm the doctor.
Then he could have felt like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that could have created tension and a bunch of other stuff.
And I wouldn't have known why. I'd be like, fuck you. Why are you being like this? I want to be a good
technician.
And
I think that happens a lot. I think,
yeah.
Obviously, I think all the things you're talking about are very important. And I 100% agree that it's a big part to why we're leaving the field. Like, zero opportunity for growth. Guys, I don't care what field you're in.
If
you have no opportunity for growth, it's silly. You're just like, why am I doing
fulfilling.
It? Yeah, it's not fulfilling. I'm not growing. Because good technicians and people who are working in these, like when you're amazing, you want to learn more. You feed off that. It rejuvenates you. Like CE rejuvenates me. Conferences like keep me going. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's how I found my niche. And like, I don't think I talk to techs about this all the time because we're so fucking exhausted. The idea, I get it, guys. You're so burnt out and exhausted that the idea of doing CE is kind of like April said earlier, like I'm just checking off the box to get my fucking license still.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you do CE, like for me, and
I've got a topic you like.
Yes. You find you find the thing you love.
And you're just absorbing it.
And then you learn other things and you get to talk to colleagues and like, it's literally rejuvenate. Like it keeps, it's a big reason why I think I've been in the field for over 10 years. And April, how long have you been in the field?
Over 20 years.
Yeah. Whoa, shit. We passed the 5-year mark, y'all.
I know. That's the thing. That's what felt so bad about leaving. I was like, we're an anomaly.
Yeah.
And I would have given anything to learn from a technician of 20 years.
Yeah.
And think about it. Who has that? Almost no one. Almost no one gets the benefit of that. That is a crisis. That is a problem. That is invaluable to a team. And why are we not going, we need that and that, and we need to, you know, to bring those people into our hospital, to lift them up and be like, this is the epitome of embracing all of what this is. But that means that person has boundaries, that person is valued, they get to continue growing, and they get to embrace or feed into whatever that passion is for them. Which when I realized it was teaching other people, because I was like, dude, it doesn't take any effort for me to lift you up. And really all you needed was somebody else to go, of course you can do this.
Yeah, those support, and I mean, because you said your story, I love that. I think support systems are so important. And I understand everyone doesn't have those, which is why I think me and April are so passionate about sharing how amazing animal professionals are. Because it sounds crazy, but like, I don't think a lot of technicians realize how fucking amazing they are. And they're never, but to be fair, their history is, they're never told that. They're never given opportunities to excel. And then, like you said, they kind of start to feel stagnant and stuck.
Yeah.
And guys, I've felt like that. And I'm sure April has too. And feeling stuck is, along with all the other things that we have to deal with. I think you said it perfectly at the beginning of the podcast, but you basically said something along the lines of, we deal with a lot of sad stuff. We do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, we have, you know, hard conversations. We see difficult things. But let's be honest, we see a lot of fucking amazing things. Like I'm reinforced more like the fearful animal who's not fearful of strangers anymore, or the dog that was fired from a vet clinic and now we can get blood. That shit keeps me going. Yeah. But for techs who are only, again, it's that like bucket analogy, which they use with kids, but your whole bucket gets empty and you have nothing to fill it back up.
Yeah.
You just, there's nowhere else to go, but down.
Right.
And a lot of techs are struggling with mental health issues, as well as just animal professionals, dog trainers. I mean, all animal professionals are struggling. And I think it's a big part of that. Like you said earlier, like that tipping point, obviously the pandemic, but also these techs have been just dealing with all the sad stuff and not getting any happy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the truth is, you know, the veterinary social work world is sort of emerging, but the fact that it's never even been considered. we were like, oh, support us? You mean the staff? No. No, we do that. We give ourselves until, you know, we're bone dry, and then we keep giving more. Like, we didn't know there was an alternative to that. I didn't. In fact, again, that's why I feel like I'm waffling, because I am so much happier than I was when I was so incredibly burnt out with horrendous compassion fatigue. And it's almost like my body wishes I was still there, because it knows that. It knows that feeling.
It's like, because again, I think it's so interesting, because I talk about mental health issues a lot. I think it's really important to end the stigma. Mm-hmm. And every single animal professional I've talked to, it blows my mind how mm-hmm. similar mm-hmm. our stories are. And I'm just like, we're completely from different backgrounds, right? But we have a very similar struggle with mental health and with compassion fatigue. Mm-hmm. And I've worked a lot on, like, I joke, but I literally just last year, and I've been out of vet med or general practice. I'm still in vet med. See, God, see,
mm-hmm. I know.
I've been out of GP for a few years. And last year I was the first time I had a hobby outside of animals. So it's a process, you guys, but like you said, it's so hard to get, even for us who advocate for other people and can talk to other people, to get out of that like mental mm-hmm. place. It's mm-hmm. a lot of work.
the identifying with it is the thing. Yeah. Cause it's how I get my pride. It's how I, you know, feed this passion for vet med. I love it. And it is everything to me, but just goes to show how profound that is, that it's killing me. And I'm like, but please let me stay. Like, how dysfunctional is that? But that's what it is. And so that's okay. Just recognize it and then see what we can do. The problem is, I felt then like, what if I leave now? I'm one of like 200 people left that have, you know, any.
Yeah. And then we put that pressure on ourselves.
But
it's
ourselves.
A very real pressure. Yep. You're
it's
very
so
right.
True. So it feels like, you know, you're kind of running from one thing to the next. And I think when we go, okay, right now, I've got to stop and go, what is it that we need? It's, again, I don't even know what the answers are, but it requires us to stop and ask each other what we need. And we have to recognize this work is excruciating some days, and we're willing to tolerate that is the thing. Like, we keep doing it. That's not the problem. I mean, any one of us in this field knows somebody that has said, oh, I could never do that job, right?
Oh,
and
gosh.
in my most irritated days, you know, if I'm standing in the ER, I've got 15 patients and somebody's visiting their whatever. And I couldn't do what you do. I just love animals too much. And I said, well, it's a good thing I don't, because I enjoy, you know, something, you know, it's a good thing I don't love animals, because that makes this job easier, you know. And they were like, oh, because it was a friend of a friend. So it wasn't just a client, but they were like, oh my gosh, you're so right. That was really fucking rude of me. And I was like, I'm not saying that at all, but you're right. Like, that reaction came out of me, because you saying that by just being like, I love animals too, implies that you couldn't do it because you haven't stopped to think about that. But of course we love animals too. Of course we do, almost more than anybody. And my victim advocate hating nature means I'm gonna drive myself into the ground until this patient is advocated for. And it doesn't matter what I sacrifice until I get there. But you have to recognize that that can't go hand in hand in people's minds with being compassionate for animals, because somehow it would be too much. And you're like, you're right, it should be too much. Why doesn't it bother me? Well, what did you have to shut off to get through that? Recognize that later. You got to talk to that feeling and be like, yeah, I don't like you. And when I feel this, I get, you know, whatever. And so my patients are affected and all of this stuff. And I have to slow down and recognize what's happening, because, you know, I'm being affected by this, which then leads to everybody else or my patients and all of this stuff. And probably my social life too, because who are my closest friends?
We've all
and all
lost. Yeah. We've all had relationship issues. Like, let's be honest, like it floods into your, not your real life, but your everything.
Right.
Like, I remember there was a large part of my life where literally I woke up, I went to work, I came home and fell asleep in my disgusting scrubs because I was so exhausted. And that was my week. every day. And like you said, you just give and give and give and give. And back then I wasn't as aware of certain things, right? Because I'm on a mental health journey party. But now I think just being aware of being like, I feel like this, you may not be able to fix the issue right away, but being aware is such a big part because subconsciously it's going to affect your staff members. And like you said, the clients that you work with, like anytime I hear any person mention the cost of vet med, I used to get triggered, but now I actually, like if it's a dog training client, for example, we have a conversation. I'm very kind. And I say, actually, and I address, and then they, I've had clients cry. Guys, I don't make people cry. I think it's just that they weren't aware, like your friend. I've had other clients then go to their vets and get them gifts. And I'm like,
Yes, exactly.
You said, they don't, we're not ever, I love, you're so good, April, because I love the way you worded it. Because you basically were saying like, we're giving our life, literally in some cases, giving our lives for these animals. So of course, society is going to think the kind of similar vibes, or we've all been, of course, like dog trainers, vet techs, our jobs are glamorized. Like we always hear you play with puppies and kittens. I never fucking see puppies and kittens, but
they're parvo or they're, you know, in my world, they're
our
dying,
jobs are very glamorized in society. Yeah. And I think even
also
with each
they
other,
don't know.
They don't know. And I think even with each other, again, like colleagues, sometimes, you know, you don't feel comfortable saying, I feel this way right now. Because then I might be like, oh, maybe I'll place a catheter in that patient for that euthanasia. It's all about team effort because you just had one of your favorite patients pass away and we're fucking human.
Right. Like, of course you would need a minute. And I'm like, no, I don't need a minute. So
Because we glamorize, like, I'm a fucking superhero. I used to joke that I was RoboCop and say it like a positive thing. And now I'm like, that's so fucked. Like,
I know. Like, of course I'm here because I drove myself into the ground. Like, duh, I'm in the ground now. Now I wonder, I cannot possibly wonder any longer why I'm here. I know why. Because I drove straight here.
On that amazing note, oh my gosh, I love April so much. Regarding helping other technicians and animal professionals succeed, obviously we talked a lot about educating yourself. And I understand ideally your employer will be doing that. And in your interview process, you're talking about CE allowance because every clinic I worked at, that wasn't even a thing. And then I mentioned it at the interview and they're like, we'll put that in the book.
And then I bet the other staff was like, oh my gosh. We get CE. How incredible is that?
It's crazy that it's not like scrub a lot. Like these things are not normal. So techs are very like, we're needed, guys. We're amazing. We're needed. And I'm not, I'm not saying that everyone can leave their job. I understand that. But the more of us advocating for ourselves, we're even if the vet clinic doesn't do it right away, I'm planting a seed. Like
totally. And they're going to talk to their coworkers and be like, oh yeah, well I used to get scrub allowance or I got $1,500 of CE. And they're like, are you kidding me? We get zero and there's people out there getting a bunch. And then at the very least, they can be like, listen, let's talk to management and see if that's something we can work up. And then we just say, listen, we want to prioritize our education. My personal growth is really important to me. And I will be here longer for, you know, when I'm better at my job, I'm going to stay at a place longer. I'm better for the other, the patients, the other staff members can lean on me. It's just, so it's just overwhelmingly more supportive. And so you really only have to, because again, we will do so much of it. Right. You just have to let us and be supportive of that. And, you know, my clinic didn't know what a VTS was before me. I didn't either. I never met anyone. So I was like, I was wondering if I could have some help, you know, pursuing this. And they were like, oh, of course. And a lot of people, they don't know because they don't ask and they just assume it's a no, but sometimes it's just introducing the idea. And then, you know, the rest of us can support it and be like, yeah, we really like that. And that's really important. And gosh, if I had that, I feel like I could, you know, have grown in this other area and I would have stayed at such and such a clinic longer or, you know, whatever that may be.
And that's
you.
I think empowering staff and educating them will allow them to, like you mentioned, longevity. Like I'm going to stay at the clinic I'm being utilized at and empowered to do the thing I like. And it's best to have that staff member. Like, for example, the one clinic I worked at, obviously I was the behavior person, and I had another staff member who loved like saying goodbye in the euthanasia process. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. And she created, we had a group that caregivers could go to. It was like amazing. Mm-hmm. But we all, you had to like our main jobs, of course, but we were empowered. And because we were empowered, beautiful things, our practice was so much better, not just for each other, but for our patients and their caregivers. And like, I'm more inclined to stay here because I'm doing something I love. And we're going to have the person who is most educated on that, passionate about that, being a cheerleader for the rest of the staff. Like,
yes. And that just happens because they feel good. Like I didn't know I liked emergency at all. I didn't know I liked teaching. All of these things happened because I did it. And somebody was like, that was awesome. I feel so much better. And I was like, I feel better too. We all feel great. And now that we bettered ourselves. So, maybe I kind of like this. And that's the thing. Having the opportunity to spend more time helps you, you know, see other areas where you may find a niche. And then you all, you know, complement each other in that way. Like, you know, who's going to be amazing with the healer that comes in, you know, who's going to be amazing with the chihuahua, you know, is going to be amazing with a cat. And you don't go, ugh, you know, Tabitha probably would be better for this cat, but you know, I'm good too. And so I'm not going to like ask for support. I'm just going to do it. And I'm going to do it the way I've always done it, because I can get the job done. But that's just like self-preservation.
And it puts us at risk. I mean, that's when you're thrown into a situation, like, as again, we've all been, and you're thrown into a situation, for example, like a really fearful animal. Mm-hmm. If you're a baby tech, right? And you're thrown into that situation, it's not going to go well for anybody. Like, that staff member may be injured, that now that staff member's permanently traumatized from that specific
You will grade. Have absolutely like, internalized that. And you will keep that fear with you. Every cat you touch,
and then it increases over time.
Affect their reaction to you. And because you're frustrated with it, because you're embarrassed, because that's shameful.
Exactly. Because we create that kind of environment not to be able to say, hey, could you, like, I loved the staffs I worked with. Like, we created an environment. We worked hard to try where, like, for example, I knew a really fearful animal was coming in. Handling's my thing. So we would get the vampire, right? Like, phlebotomist, like my girl. Yeah. Who would get it? Because we all have different skill sets. And when we work, the things we could fucking do together, guys.
Like, like, why take a person and make them feel bad about the one thing that they're not at that level of yet, but not, you know, embrace the thing that they rock. Like, some people would come to me, staff, and say, I really like the idea of doing fear-free. I don't know how to do that in an emergency clinic. And I was like, I don't either. Let's figure it out. And then they took that path because they felt passionate about it and introduced those ideas to us because they saw that it was embraced when everybody had a different thing. Or
and just that little bit of support, like,
matters
guys,
a lot.
Just even if you're in a place where you feel like you may not be supported. And of course you can always start looking for other jobs and advocating for yourself, but obviously these issues are complex, but support. We all have that friend that we stay at the clinic for. support, do what you can to support that person and listen to them, talk about cases. Again, unfortunately, ideally it would be across the board and that's the goal, but take care of yourself. And like, I know it sounds lame, but like, learn more. It's fun.
It really is.
And on that note, April, you have this amazing business. Can you tell me a little bit about what you do and how you can work with some amazing practices out there to help empower their staff?
Yeah. So again, as I said, it started with the training manual. So basically just has skills lists and protocols that are associated with them. So for every level, assistant level 1, 2, 3, and then technician level 1, 2, 3, and then there's like a VTS level. Everybody has sort of a list of things that they're going to work through. And then with that is the manual, which has your basically instructions on everything. And so you have basically this reference at times. I would love to make it into a little handy pocket book. So you have it on hand, jot down notes. But it's something that, you know, like I learned this skill, I know how to do it, but what was that detail? How many drops of saline do I use? They open it up and they can see, you know, what the protocol is and whatever that may mean as far as like the next steps, so they know how to do it right. Or just maybe that person then trains the next person, but they're like, let me look at a protocol just so I have, you know, an SOP or something.
And then the trainer, right, is actually familiar with the techniques, guys.
Yes.
That is so important.
And their techniques that your hospital decided you wanted to use. So when there's a question later that's like, how do we clean the endoscope or whatever? Then you go, well, let's look at the book, because I always did it like this. Okay, but what does our manual say to do? What do our managers think that we should, how
it helps
we
to take the ego, weird human component out of it.
Point. Yeah. Yes. Because that is the problem.
Yeah. No, it's feel you. Yeah.
We all want to have these skills, but it's too hard to say, can you teach me how to read a PCV too? Because you're like, that's embarrassing. I should know how to do this. And it's too hard to ask. And so I'm just not going to do it. Quite frankly, that's the part that we have to get over. So let's get a list of the things. We just run through the list and nobody's ego is involved, because we should know you learn things by whoever taught it to you and the way that person taught it to you. And so you may not be doing it the same way as even the other technicians in your practice. And so gets everybody on the same page, but also now you have like a template for the steps to go to the next thing. So somebody who is happy with, you know, where they're at and they don't want to learn anything new, they stay there and they do their thing. Somebody else who's like, I've got to, you know, not drive myself.
For growth and resources for that. Yes.
They now have the path and now they can do it. And that keeps them happy and fulfilled and all of that stuff. And so that training manual was a big piece of it. That's what I also spent literally years trying to finish it.
Oh, I
a little bit
it.
Of a perfectionist. I don't know if
it's
any
another
of you guys are
it's
late.
A tech thing, man. See, guys, it's so funny. Imposter syndrome. Why do we all have it? I don't know.
Uh-huh. Right. Exactly. Another full episode.
Yeah.
But I also was like, yeah, who am I to say? Well, I was the, you know, head tech of an emergency practice. So I'm as much of a person to say as anyone else. So then it just became, well, how can I create this so that basically nobody else has to start over? Why are we all reinventing the wheel? How silly. So let's go from there. And then at the same time with, like, you know, a lot of these practices, they don't have the time to get a person together to come in and do the training. They have, you know, they have staff that's just running around getting the job done. And so I also will come in and do like hands-on training or, you know, whatever that may be that they need, whether that's consulting about processes or whatever. Then I can come in and sort of just give my input and discuss that with them.
I love all of that so much. We will definitely be sharing all of April's website and other information to contact her. But to end the episode, and I probably will most likely definitely be having her back because she's amazing.
I'm coming back.
I see that confidence, guys. Yes. I reinforce that. But I like to end the podcast by asking the guest, what makes you happy? It could be something vet med related, like today. What makes me happy? Today, my conversation with you has been super fun and enlightening, and it makes me happy. So it could be something like that or your coffee, but let me know something that makes you happy, April.
I'm an outdoor nature sucker. And if it's not nature, it's animals. So it's, you know, having joy outside of work sometimes is just something I have to focus on too. So I would say sitting in a hammock, looking at the mountains, that makes me happy.
Yeah. Right? I saw that you were a hiker. So I'm a trail runner now because I'm mental.
Oh yeah.
And when I am an Oregon girl, yes, I have not, I've been to like Portland a million times, but surprisingly I have not hit up any of the parks.
Well,
chaos, but I need to do that.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. In Central Oregon, we don't have nearly the rain that the valley gets, which is where Portland and Salem are. So I actually have mostly sun all of the time. Actually, maybe I won't promote that because we don't, you know,
I have like 8 feet of snow outside my house. So like it's better. Well, thank you so much for being with us, April. Like I said, guys, we'll share all her awesome resources, but Thank you again for being here.
It's my pleasure, genuinely.
Thank you for listening. If you have left the field, email us and let us know why. Share your story at talesfromanrvt@gmail.com. You can also find us at Tales from a Vet Tech on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you definitely don't want to miss next episode with Liz Houston, where we will be talking all about technician utilization and how to advocate for yourself as a technician.